Hi, hello. Welcome to Season 5 of The Process Podcast, an interview series exploring the process of survival as a creative. We talk about money, mental health, relationships, the creative process itself, and everything in between. This season specifically focuses on creativity within the realm of environmental conservation and social public art. I'm your host, Shannon Byrne. Hannah Spencer does all of our design and branding, and Lonnie Webb runs our Instagram and makes many of our visuals. Big thanks to Jeffrey Silverstein, who was a guest on our last season, for letting us use his song, Given the Light, this season's intro music. Hope you all dig it. Hey y'all. I am extremely honored to share this very special episode with you, with Eric Darby. He lives on a airship compound in the Peonia, Colorado area with his family, most of which he built. There's also like tiny homes and other structures on the property that you'll hear us talk about. This is a very candid conversation largely about money. So Eric was going to flight school. He was drafted into the military, served his minimum, was a commercial pilot for like a minute, and decided to leave all of that because it just did not sit right with him, did not align. He does not value money. He values different parts of life and has made it work living off of an average of $7,500 a year, which is wild to think about, but he's done it and he has a really beautiful life on a beautiful property with the people who he loves. In addition to money, we talk about all sorts of relationships with people, with things, with values, with your property. It was, again, just a very candid conversation. Eric was so easy to talk to and also a really great listener. Like, there's a lot of reciprocity that happened. Yeah, I was super fascinated by his lifestyle and he just totally was an open book about it all. I don't want to say too much more. I hope you get as much from this conversation as I did. Let us know if you have any questions, comments, feedback, etc. Show notes are at theprocess.co, and you can find some pretty cool photos of Eric's property on Instagram, also at theprocess.co. Sweet. I will catch you all later. Cheers.
And I don't work for money very often, because it feels like prostitution to me.
Mm.
It feels like it's my life in trade for money, and of course the money is what feeds me and keeps me alive, but I don't like the feeling of it. I don't like that money is the driving force and the only way for me to get it is to prostitute myself to someone who has it.
Mm.
So I really resist that. And I tend to think that most people are in that position where they, I better not say most, but an awful lot of people don't really like what they do.
Yeah.
The whole business of Hump Wednesday and thank God it's Friday and I hate Mondays and all that, you know, it shows that they're just not that thrilled about their work week.
Right.
They can't wait till the weekend and then here comes Monday again. So I think, man, it's got to be a better way than doing that. And so, though I was trained to take on a really good-paying job and just get right in the pipeline, I didn't. I resisted it because I did not want to get in that place where I had to have a job. And that's the reason I don't borrow money, because borrowing money puts you in that position where you have to have that constant income.
Yeah.
And so I avoided that at all costs so that I could avoid having a job.
What was your training then?
I was a commercial pilot.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And aircraft mechanic. And my dad was, too, and he had a lot of great connections, and he tried to hook me up. But I didn't know why at the time, but I really didn't want those jobs. They would just shoot me right to the top, just skip several steps and go up the ladder. But I knew that I'd get trapped in that system, and I didn't want to do that. And so I never did join up. I didn't really so actively think about getting a job as a pilot. I was drafted into the military, and they trained me how to fly. So when I came out of the military, I flew a little bit here and there for a paycheck, but not for very long. And that's how I kind of ended up being a pilot. But I never really have pursued it. And my friends all have pretty much retired by now, but they've climbed right up the ladder, the people I was in the military with.
Yeah. How long were you in the military?
Just 3 years. Oh. Yeah, that was, I was drafted, so it was my obligation to do 3 years. And, you know, we've homeschooled our kids, and that required me to be home, which meant that I wasn't going to get in the car every morning and drive away for 8 hours and then show up at dinner time. So I started a home business, and I didn't make a lot of money at it, but I made lamps and lampshades as a home business so I could stay home. So it was a very odd thing when I actually left, when my kids were there, and I would drive off. Where are you going? You know, because that was really unusual for them, because I was always home. And we did it that way. My wife and I did it on purpose to be around and be with the kids. And, of course, we really wanted to homeschool. So.
Did your wife have a... Was she working, or is she...
No. I mean, a little bit. She has a little bit of job, little tiny part-time things here and there, just enough to just get us by. Yeah. But we didn't have much money. And what I find interesting is that... the Social Security people, they send you your entire work history at some point when you start getting ready to retire. And I took all of the income, they've got it all printed out, all of my taxable income for every year I've ever worked since my first working summer, which was when I was 16, and added up all the money I've made in my life, divided it by the number of years I'd worked, and it came up with the number of $7,500. That's how much money I've made every year.
Wow.
For my whole working life.
Wow. How much taxable money you've made every year?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I haven't made a lot of money under the table, so...
No.
So that's pretty much, you know, that's the bulk of it. I may have made another 25%, maybe above that, if I'm getting paid for doing little jobs.
Yeah.
Cash or something, but but yeah. So that is just way below the poverty level, and yet I don't feel like we've ever wanted for anything or lacked anything. And you know, you can talk to my kids, and they compare their life to their friend's life, and their friend can, you know, buy new sneakers and things like that, and we didn't necessarily weren't able to do that. But
was that ever an issue for them? Did they ever complain about it?
No, not really. Not really. The thing about it is that we were such a family because everybody stayed home.
Mm.
They didn't go to school. We didn't go to work.
Yeah.
That I think that's one of the reasons why we can continue to live together now is they are all three adults.
Mm-hmm.
So we really still enjoy each other's company, and we live in a much more independent way. Everybody has their own standalone house on the property,
right?
So we don't live together, but they've even told me and my wife they appreciate how they were raised.
That, I'm sure, yeah.
You know, just because they, you know, they can handle themselves, and they do have an unusual education, and it kind of shows. I mean, if you meet them, that's what people have said to me. You know, they really seem unusual adults.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Any of them go to college?
No. Oh. No. They all saw that as, you know, they all had the option.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I would pay for it because they didn't have the money, but they would, you know, there's ways to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they just, they saw a lot of their friends do that and then come back and then couldn't, you know, get a job doing what they'd studied and end up being massage therapists or carpenters or something. And so they just skipped that whole thing. And actually, because of the internet, they are all self-learners. If they want to learn something, even now, that's how they do it. They just go YouTube it and learn that way.
Yeah. Are they, does everyone just like live on the land and not have your typical job?
That's right.
Cool.
Yeah, no one has a typical job. They do part-time things. My son works with young kids in the summertime. He has a little business where it's an adventure business, takes young kids out. Into nature, and my other son is a computer He works on computers, uh-huh. fixing people's computers and phones and that sort of thing. Uh-huh. And then my daughter, she actually has a job that's working for the, that's sort of a part-time job working for the a company here in Paonia that makes soil. Uh-huh. It makes special amended soils, you know, for gardening and that sort of thing. And so she just recently got a job working with them. And I don't work now. I'm retired and I get a Social Security.
When's the last time you had like a job or like a part-time job?
Well, if you discount my home business, I would have to go back probably close to 40 years. And when I was in flying in Alaska, after I got out of the Army, I went to Alaska and flew for a while as a commercial pilot up there.
What's it like living in Alaska?
Oh, it was a blast. Alaska is just such a different world.
Yeah.
Really, sure. Really is. And we, normally, the way it's done is it's a very seasonal thing. You know, the summer's when people go up there, and that's when they do all the flying. And then winter, everything shuts right down. And then all the pilots usually just go south and then wait till the next summer and come back up to Alaska. But we stayed a full year just to experience the winter.
Yeah.
And, oh, my goodness. Well, we lived in the interior, you know, so we saw minus 40, minus 50 degree
wow.
temperatures in the winter with very little sunlight and all that. You know, this typical Fairbanks thing.
Yeah.
And it was really a fun experience. And
really?
We did do some flying in the winter. It was very, very little, but I did get to fly in the winter some.
It wasn't depressing, the darkness?
Well, it frequently can be, but I don't know. I've never been bothered by that very much. You might want to ask my wife if she was bothered by it. But yeah, usually the light is a thing. But we had our first son on the ground then, and we were busy with him, and of course I would go out and fly or work in the hangar, and it was a great experience. But that's my last real paying job where somebody signed a paycheck and handed it to me.
Yeah. Where are you originally from?
East Coast.
Where about?
Delaware.
Okay. So you were in Delaware when you got drafted?
Actually, yes. I was in college. I was drafted out of college.
Yeah. Where were you going to college?
The University of Delaware.
Yeah.
And you had to maintain a C average, and my grades got below a C, and so the draft board sent me a letter. So I didn't really have any choice. Vietnam was going on at the time,
yeah.
and they were needing people. And so had I just allowed myself to be drafted, I would have gone into the Army.
Mm.
And been my total time in would have been 2 years, and then I'd been out and had my obligation taken care of. But they offered this flight program, and there your obligation after you graduated from flight school was 3 years.
Mm.
So it was a longer commitment, but I graduate with I'd leave the Army with a commercial helicopter pilot's license.
Yeah.
So I chose to go that route.
Yeah.
And was in the Army for... I actually got out early because they had too many people. So I didn't actually serve my... It should have been 3 years plus my training, but it was 2 years plus my training.
Uh-huh.
So, and the training was a year, so that's why I say I was in for 3 years.
Uh-huh. What were you going to college for?
Mechanical and aerospace engineering.
Oh, so that makes mm-hmm. sense that mm-hmm. you chose that path.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That's what you're... And was that because your dad did it?
It was. It was. A lot of it was, you know. But, you know, when I was 19, 20 years old, I really didn't know what I wanted to do or how to do it. But I can tell you this. I've just discovered this recently. My dislike of school was the thing that really got me ready, set me up on how I live my life. Because I disliked school so much, I felt trapped by the mandatory having to go to school. I just felt like I had no option. I didn't think that there were maybe it's another school. And I'm really mostly talking about high school. Because I did, you know, I was fairly social and did fine until I got to high school. But it was just so painful to sit in those boring classes and watch the clock tick and want the clock to go faster. You know, so I could get out of school and get to the weekend or get to the summer, just not go to school because I really didn't like it. And I felt cornered. I felt like it was prison to me. And so that's why I deduced that working would feel the same way.
Yeah.
If I get a job, I'm gonna get myself right back in that position that I disliked so much in high school. You know, I really skirted around it. Even my job as a pilot in Alaska was pretty darn out of the box. You know, it wasn't having to go to work 8 hours a day or anything like that. It was, you know, it was lots of different, do lots of different things, and it was a very loose organization. It was kind of fun, really, even working there.
I was going to say, today there are so many options for different career paths that aren't your 9-to-5 going to.
Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, I'm assuming it wasn't really like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what's interesting is that I kind of know what I like to do now, but it's taken me a long time to figure that out. I feel like if education was really just a pathway to figure out what it is that you like to do, then it would be of value.
Yeah.
And then you say, oh, I see, this is what I love doing this, so I'll just make a career out of this. What's it take to do that? Oh, go to technical school. Oh, maybe you got to go to college. Maybe you got to get a graduate degree, a master's degree, whatever. Then it makes sense to, you know, to get whatever training you need or education you need to support that. But when, at least for me, when I was 19, I had no real clue. I was really just following my dad, thinking that I'll just do what my dad did.
Right.
And he helped me to lead me in that direction too. But it turns out that really wasn't my thing.
Yeah.
At all.
What was that moment like for you when you kind of realized that wasn't your thing?
Well, you know, I don't think it was in a moment. It mostly it was my rejection of the offers that I had about jobs and saying, you know, I don't really want that. I don't know why. It's a beautiful opportunity, but yeah, I don't really want to do that. And I couldn't really say, oh, that's just like school. I don't want to go there because that's going to just be, I'm going to be at somebody's beck and call, and I don't want that. I couldn't say that. Then all I knew is that something about it didn't feel right, so I sidestepped it. I didn't pursue any of those opportunities.
How did your dad or family react when you left being a pilot?
Yeah, this is an interesting point. My mother said to me one time, she said, why aren't you flying and being a mechanic? You've got all that training. Why don't you do it? And my answer was, well, you know, Mom, I just figured out I'm not that excited about it. I really don't like it. And her answer to me was, well, you're not really supposed to like your job.
Yeah. People say that to me all the time.
Is that right?
Okay. Friends who work
for
tech companies doing the thing. Mm-hmm. They say that. Yeah. No one likes their job. You're not supposed to like your job.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The heck.
It's
well,
work.
I wanted to change that. I did not want that to be the case. You know, I wanted my life to be something that I was excited about.
Yeah.
And things that I could do that were fun.
Totally.
So, it reminds me that, you know, Logan and Cooper both went to Central America this past winter. And when they got back, they just went down there just to see it, you know. And they when they got back, Logan especially, he said that he had this idea while he was gone that he really wanted to see our property turn into. And then he didn't have the right word. He just couldn't think. So we started listing all the words that we thought to help describe it. And it became very eclectic. Lots of different ideas came out. We had family meetings around it. And but it turns out that it all boiled down to what we want to do is we want to create the space to be creative. Mm. With Logan, because he doesn't have a job, because he has fluidity in his time, he can go off with his friend and go mushroom hunting or just do anything in the middle of the day, you know, change plans or just say, oh, I think I'll take a road trip, you know, and go visit somebody or something. The space in our lives, we said, okay, we see that we have the space. We see we've created it. What do we do with it? Mm-hmm. And what we came up with was we really want to just remain open to whatever, wherever we feel called to, whatever direction we feel called to go in. You know, as a parent, frequently, and parents, I think, even though their heart's in the right place, make this mistake. They think they know what their kid wants. Like my dad thought he knew what I, well, since I didn't really have an opinion, he jumped in and filled in the blank for me.
Yep.
Whereas I think it's best to just say, okay, you know, let me just give you a blank sheet, give you some time to figure that out. Because if and when you ever do, that's it. You'll never work again. you will, if you make money doing what it is that you found, that you discovered is your calling, then it won't feel like a job. It'll just feel like, you know, it'll just be what you love to do. So there's a lot of talk about that, you know, do what you love and the money will follow kind of thing. But we have very purposefully decided that what we want to do is support each other to allow that space. So from a parent's point of view, if I, one would say, oh, your kids don't have a job, they don't contribute to the household, what's the problem here? There's no problem. I want them to feel unencumbered by obligations and that sort of thing. That's the reason they live here rent-free. That's the reason we built them a house, each a house, so they can have their own independent space. And now I don't have ideas about which direction they should go or what they should go to school for or what they should, occupation is hiring, why not go down and get a job with those guys? I don't offer that stuff because it's not really useful. What I've tried to do is create the spot for them to figure that out on their own and to stay out of the answer. Don't try to influence the answer. I've learned by making that mistake, by thinking I was helping and all it was doing was confusing them. Yeah. So I've told them, I said, I don't care what you do. You can hang out on the computer all day, or you can get a job if you want to, or you can go off to school, or you can sleep all day if you want to. If that's what you feel like you need to do, then do that, because I trust that eventually you will begin to get a hold on what it is that you really like to do, and then you can feed that and see where that takes you.
Where do you think that comes from, though? Like, if, for example, someone's sleeping all day, and I know that's like an extreme example, but do you think it comes from trying things, like experiencing things, or somewhere else?
I think, yes, it does come from trying things. I mean, that's one of the ways that it comes. And actually, some of it's a little ethereal. It's not really a hard science, you know. It might just come to you suddenly. You might go, I've thought of this 3 days in a row. I'm going to try this. Mm. You know, I don't know where this is coming from, but I feel called to kind of go talk to this person who does this and see if this is something I want to do.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And, you know, the sleeping all day thing, that's hard for parents to think that what they're doing is creating a sloth, you know, in their kid. They're, oh my gosh, you can't have this. Maybe that's an issue with people. Maybe there are people who want to sleep all day, although that's ultimately not a big problem if that's really what they want to do, unless, of course, somebody has to buy their food for them all the time and they're not contributing. That person's tired of doing that, maybe. Then you say, well, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do this anymore. You're going to have to get out of bed and figure out how to feed yourself. When you have the space to try stuff, then at least the smorgasbord of all the things that are to do, at least you can try them.
Yeah.
You have the time to try it. I had a friend who had this brilliant business idea, and he really wanted to start this business. And I thought, well, why don't you start it? It's a great idea. Well, I don't have time to develop that business. Well, why not? And because this is something that's hard for me to understand. He said, because I have to work. I said, well, just quit your job. He said, everything sinks. If I quit my job, it all goes away. I can't pay my mortgage, can't keep my car payments, you can't buy groceries. It all, you know, the whole thing is held afloat by my working all the time. And I simply couldn't handle one month's, I couldn't not work for a month, because then I'd lose everything. So it was, that was interesting to me. I thought, oh gosh, I guess that's fairly typical, you know, that the people have to work and they don't have time. But to me, the only value, the real value in being alive is the time and, you know, how you choose to spend it, which is why I think that working is, I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
And I love to work, but I want to work on what I want to work on. I like to be busy.
Yeah.
I like to do stuff. Just about everything you see here I have built in the last 8 years.
Yeah, I was going to ask you to kind of tell me what I've been looking at.
Well, this is a kind of my rendition of an Earthship. Mm-hmm. Earthships are is a term that came out of Taos, New Mexico. A fellow down there, an architect, came up with the idea of building houses out of used automobile tires. That's essentially what you see here. Uh-huh. It's a little bit altered by some of my ideas, but this is a two-story building. We're on the ground floor now, and then the upstairs of this building is a dance hall.
Oh, is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah, that's what it was built for, and we've had many dances up there. And I just installed last month a wooden hardwood dance floor, which I've been saving for about 5 years to be able to afford to put a real floor in. And the floor's not even finished. It's not even sanded and all that yet, but it's just been installed. So, yeah, so that's where we are now. I mean, these vehicles you see here, this little trailer's obvious. That's a tiny home.
That's
actually belongs to a friend of mine who's a neighbor. She lives next door to here, and she is building that here because her land has nothing on it. And so here we have power and tools and everything, and I'm teaching her how to build the tiny home, and she's pretty much done it all herself. And when it's finished, we'll just pull it over to her property, and she'll be instantly have an instant house.
Yeah.
That's that. The other trailer is a sauna.
That little
Airstream Argosy thing. Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
The big house?
Yeah, the big house is the only structure that was here when we bought this property. It's 16 acres, and it's an Earthship also.
Is it?
Yeah. It has some second-story buildings on it, a bedroom and a porch, and I built those after I moved in. And then there's a shop, which is welding as well as woodworking, and then various buildings where everybody else lives.
And are they spread out a bit?
Pretty well, yeah. Cooper, my first son, he lives down in the Gulch here. You can't see his place from here. Logan lives uphill. Elizabeth lives in a little cabin right down the road there. That cabin used to be 5 miles from here. I built it on a piece of property that we were caretaking, but I built it small enough so I could move it.
Okay.
Since we were caretaking, I didn't want to build it and have to leave it. And she was actually born in that building.
Oh, wow.
And then when we moved, I said, do you want to bring any of these buildings? She said, yeah, I want to own the one I was born in. Mm-hmm. So she and I jacked it up, put it on a trailer, and brought it over here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That was really fun.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
So why a dance hall?
Well, everybody in the family likes to dance, for one thing. I just wanted to have a facility that I could offer to the community. It's not just for dancing. You know, we have other activities that we do in there. We're thinking about, this is another one of the things that we talk about when we think about how to expand and utilize the property better. Because of that space, we could have yoga seminars here.
Yeah, totally.
Or Qigong workshops or that sort of stuff. My wife's ex-wife is an artist. She lives here, and she is. And that, of course, is that's something that I forget is unusual.
That your ex-wife lives.
Yeah,
your
that we. Yeah, we're not married anymore. We're divorced. We were married.
And this is the mother of your kids.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. She's Lucy, and she is the mom of all three kids. Mm-hmm. And so, when we got divorced, I don't know how long ago it was, 10 or 15 years ago. You know, we're still a nice, tight family. Of course, now we're off on another subject, but being
divorced... Oh, I have questions.
Being divorced is just the best. I mean...
Why is that?
Well, being married was difficult.
Yeah.
It
also,
was... Well, you know...
You're like, I'd imagine with your lifestyle, it'd be... Well, I don't know. It could go either way.
Well, you're right. But, you know, from a... you know, when we were married, the typical stuff that came up for us was discussions and or arguments about money, you know, decisions about vacations we want to take or, you know, what we wanted to do. How, you know, we really tried to work like we were a team,
mm-hmm.
a mom and a dad. And we would decide on a issue, and sometimes it was a compromise for one or the other or both of us to come to a decision. None of that is in the equation now. Lucy has her own money, and she spends it the way she wants to spend it. And she spends her time the way she wants to spend her time. And I do the same thing. And I won't speak for her, but I really enjoy her company. And it's nice to see her and find out how she's doing. And we frequently eat meals together. You know, and I, what'd you do yesterday? And she'll fill me in on stuff. And she lives in a tiny home here that I built. And I'm building another structure for her right now, which will be her art studio.
That's nice.
I compare life now to when I was married. And of course, you know, people do sometimes find that after they've been married a long time, it just, something goes south somehow. It's just, why are we not so, why is this not exciting anymore? And we may have been victim to that to some degree. I personally feel just less burdened by having to, and if it did feel like it was kind of a issue to have to always make decisions together and always say, well, how are we going to spend this money, or where, you know, how are we going to spend our time? And now it's just, you know, we're both free. I sent her a text one day. I said, Lucy, will you be home for supper tonight? And she said, no, I'm in New Mexico right now. And see, she just got in a car and went to New Mexico without even, I didn't even know. That's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if I'd been so fine with that if I was home with the kids and we were married and we were supposed to do the, I don't know.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, we don't have the responsibility of little kids anymore. You know, our kids are grown and they can take care of themselves. But anyway, it's nice. It's just really a freeing thing to do what I want to do with my time and money and without having to, you know, having to come to some consensus with my partner.
That seems like a common theme for you.
Yeah, where did you see that parallel?
Not wanting to work.
Oh, like, yeah.
The school issue, not wanting
you're right, Shannon. Work. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, I see that, sure.
I have similar, probably to a lesser degree, but similar mm-hmm. things. Eternally single, won't work for a company.
Mm-hmm.
I call it a fear of commitment. That's what I've tied mine to.
Uh-huh. I would say that for me, too, but I don't say it as if it's a big negative.
Yeah.
I think, you know, a commitment could feel like a trap. And so, yeah, I try to avoid those pitfalls and those traps. And so, yeah, I say the freer I am, the better I feel.
Was she on board with the living with little thing, like up until?
Living with what?
Living with like a little, just a little. Was she on board with all
that? Oh, money-wise?
Yeah.
Well.
Is that a part of the?
Honestly. You know, that's a really good question. I've always thought she was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure now.
You guys never talked about it?
Not much. Mm-hmm. And mostly it's just like she bought a new car.
Mm-hmm.
I never bought a new car in my life. I never even thought to, never even entered my mind to buy a new car. And so that was a surprise. Oh, well, you bought a new car.
Yeah.
Wow. Never knew that didn't know that was in you.
Yeah.
You know, so because of things like that, decisions like that, it makes me feel like maybe she would have preferred to have more money.
Okay.
She was very good at living without much money. She really knew how to stretch a dollar and how to cook with basic ingredients and buy bags of rice in 50-pound units and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But did say something to me one time that was another surprise I'll share with you. She said that she grew up thinking that because of the examples that she saw in her own parents, that it was the husband's job to make the money and the wife's job to spend it.
Yeah.
And that really blew my hair back when I heard her say that. So I guess we weren't on the same page there.
No. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I've always felt pretty strongly about it, but I wonder now if I've dragged her along or if she had some, or if there was some willingness there. I don't know. I'll ask her.
When and how did you two meet?
We met after I got out of the Army. She was actually friends with my good Army buddy's wife. They knew each other through community college or softball team or something like that. She was living very little when I met her, and just barely skinning by, and that's one of the things that attracted me to her. She didn't drive up in a Mustang or anything. She had a bicycle, and that was it. Didn't even have a car, and so she seemed like she'd be okay with my, you know, with my lifestyle. But I mean, with the money part of it. But I don't know. I'll ask. A lot of it is because, like I say, she's made very different choices since.
Yeah, maybe she thought she was marrying this guy who's going to be a fancy pilot.
Maybe so, yeah. Although, I don't know. When she, well, of course, I was going to aircraft mechanic school when early in our relationship, so she might have thought I was on my way up. I don't know. But I don't think in, a in an extremely overt way she was really trying to be a gold digger or anything. I really don't think that's true.
No.
But maybe she didn't think it would be as close to the bone as it was. I'm not sure.
So I do want to ask you a bit about how you've made all this work in more detail. But first, like, you know, you mentioned you did this so you would have time.
Right.
Throughout the years, how would have been some of the highlights of things you've done with this time?
Oh. Well, you know, well, one of the things that we did, it pops into my mind, is that it was a long time ago, because the boys were five and two at the time, so that was over 30 years ago. These folks came to town here and proposed this notion of having a peace walk. They were looking for people who wanted to do it, and it was a walk in favor of nuclear disarmament. And though I'm not a real big flag raiser regarding nuclear disarmament, the walk sounded like a hoot. It sounded like a lot of fun. So we just said to each other, what do you think, Lucy and myself? And we decided, yeah, let's go. So out of the whole community, we were the only ones who had that time to just drop everything and go.
Yeah.
So we did. We went to Los Angeles and joined about 800 people and walked across the country. Took 11 months.
Wow.
Walked from L.A. to D.C., and it was really a defining year. It was lovely.
Yeah.
Really, really, really interesting. So that was one of the things that we did with the time. And then, of course, moving every day like that for a year, I think I got that completely out of my system.
Because
I have really no desire to do much traveling these days. I just love being here. It's hard to get me off this property.
Really?
Yeah. I really, really like to keep working on it and fixing it up. And because I got a lot of projects that are in process, and they're all exciting. Every one of them's really a fun thing to do that I look forward to doing. I'll show you one of my prize projects. I built a cabin. I actually built it for myself, apart from the compound here,
mm-hmm.
in a way to just kind of get away and get, you know, get away from the hubbub of this quiet little spot. And it turned out so nice that I share it with anybody. I have friends visiting me from the East Coast. I have people from Denver and Boulder come over and stay in the cabin. Mm-hmm. And I love to share it that way. So I will frequently build a building without even knowing its exact purpose. I get just a general idea so I can build it in a certain way, but it won't be until it's done that it actually defines itself, who wants to live there or what its end use is going to be.
Do you have a vision for it before you start, or do you just kind of start building?
Well, I have a vision in terms of the design of it, the floor plan and that sort of things, somewhat. Even that, you have to have a basic floor plan even to put in a foundation, but once that, you know, I don't have it all laid out. So as I build it, I might, you know, be standing on it. Once I got the deck built, stand on it, say, okay, the window should go here. Here's where the door should be. You know, so I kind of, in a way, build. I don't have a work from a blueprint and have it all designed right from the beginning. I do kind of make it up or change it as I go along.
You obviously have a mechanical mind, but
yeah, I do.
Where did you learn how to build, or how do you learn how to build?
It's all self-taught. Yeah.
Do you use, like, what kind of resources do you use, or do you just figure it out as you go?
Mostly figure it out.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to try to figure out, like, how to frame a wall, mm-hmm. and do it a couple of times, and then ask a real framer how it's done.
Yeah.
It's really informative, because I know what questions to ask then.
Right.
And he might say something, he or she might say something, well, this is how you do this. And I go, oh, that's much better than the way I do it. Or I say, you know, no, I'm going to keep doing it the way I do it because I actually like the way I do it better.
Yeah.
And that's really neat, you know, because I don't feel like I'm working from a recipe that way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many of the things that I build build that way without, you know, just kind of think it through and say, okay, how can this best be done? And sometimes I'll sleep on it for a day or two, and then I can manufacture what it is I need. You know, with a welding shop and my woodworking shop, I can usually build little things here and there, like my door handles on my refrigerator. Did you notice those?
Oh, no. Oh, cool.
Stuff like that, you know, mm-hmm. is fun to do. Because I love to put my hands on the things that I've created.
Yeah.
I love to see them, mm-hmm. you know, building that little kitchen there and putting the sink in mm-hmm. and building the shelves and stuff and the faucets and all that. It's so fun to, every time I turn the water on, it's a delight.
Yeah.
Because I've built it. Yeah, I use my hands to do it and my brain. Mm-hmm. It's just a real, I mean, there aren't many people who can say that they sleep in the building they built.
No. Yeah.
And that's an amazing feeling. It's mm-hmm. an amazing feeling. It is to me anyway.
Yeah, no, yeah, for sure.
To be able to think of it and then fashion it and then finish it and then lay down in it and go to sleep. And look around and say, I did all this.
Yeah.
That's a great privilege to be able to mm-hmm. be able to do that. So the more things I can get my hands on, the better I like it.
Yeah.
I like to be able to do lots of things. I don't really want to delegate anything, you know, just to someone else. I really like to take care of it myself.
Yeah. How long have you been in Peonia?
35 years.
What brought
you here? Just some friends. We were wandering. We were living in an Airstream trailer, mm. pulling it around the country in our Studebaker pickup truck. And we were actually in Santa Fe at a school down there. We had left the East Coast because it was not a great climate for homeschooling. And we were a little freaked out that it was difficult, you know, that we might be told we can't homeschool. Mm. So we were looking for a place where it was easier, and we weren't, you know, didn't feel like we had to hide. We didn't want to be criminals. So some friends visited Santa Fe, and they lived up here, and they said, oh, you should come up and see Peonia. So we did, and that was it. We really, nice small town. Kids could walk home from their friends every night.
Yeah.
And, you know, not much in the way of crime or issues that way. And it was just nice, just real sweet. And we're actually one step removed, you know, from the sleepy little town living up here.
Yeah.
Because we're up above the ditch where we have no water, and we're above the last electric pole by about a mile, so there wouldn't be any electricity here if we didn't make it ourselves. And all that is just, that's just better yet, you know.
How do you power this place, and where do you get water from?
We make our electricity with photovoltaic panels. And we store the electricity in batteries, and then you can't really tell that we're not plugged into the grid, because you can plug anything into the wall that you want to, and the electricity runs all the time and does a really good job of it. And so our system worked great. It's big enough to handle the load. I have big tools. I have welders and that sort of thing, but it all runs off the sun.
Do you have internet here?
We do. And then we have internet too, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about water? I've been talking to people about water a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, water's a little controversial. I get only a little bit nervous. You might want to record this and then not play it, but yeah. You might also play it. I don't know. But what we do is we store water. And for some reason that is completely beyond me, that's illegal. When I say store it, I'm talking about the water that falls from the sky.
Oh, you harvest rain.
Yeah.
And keep it.
It's illegal to do that.
That's illegal?
It's illegal.
My fellow resident just made it, so she lives in Ireland in a small town and harvests rain and
yeah.
self-reliant. She's made a banner that says harvest of rain and gave it to the high school.
Really?
Yeah.
This high school?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, I'd like to talk to her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a law that says you can save just so much, but we have no water at all. We have no well, we have no tap, we have no irrigation water, nothing.
Nothing.
It all our water comes from the sky. And we have a lot of roofs, so with the gutters on the roofs, we just put it in a tank.
Yeah.
And we store it in a big tank, and we garden with it, and we shower with it, we wash our dishes with it. It is our water, and that's the only water that we have.
So forgive my naivety. I don't know how these things work. How do you, filter it for drinking? I could imagine you'd have to go through a whole process.
Well, that's the only thing we filter it for.
Okay.
Is drinking. And it's just a small little thing that sits on the counter, and it's a ceramic filter. So you just put the rainwater in the top of it, and it just drips through slowly and makes really delicious drinking water.
Okay. I guess it makes sense that you could just drink rain.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Sometimes the rain picks up smoke. It picks up dust. It picks up things, in the atmosphere. And there are probably people that would say that they would never drink it because of the pollution and that sort of thing. But we filter it through some pretty sophisticated filter. I mean, it's fairly simple. It's just a drip-through ceramic thing. But as far as showers, washing dishes, and watering the plants and all that, of course, that's just straight rainwater. Mm. They don't filter it at all. I mean, there's dust in it. The dust will settle out in the tank.
Okay.
And then every 10 years you get in there and take out all the dust, and you're good to go for another 10 years. Mm. But that's the only sort of filtering system that we have for most of the water that we use. It's just letting the sediment.
Shower with that too?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So you guys haven't gotten that much rain this year.
No, exactly. That's right.
So
we are actually, interestingly,
yeah.
We are actually in better shape than most people who garden in the valley right now. Because this has been a very dry winter and a very dry summer.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was a dry winter, we harvested all the snow melt. We worked hard at it, running around, keeping hoses from freezing all winter, and putting that water into underground tanks that would keep them prevent it from freezing. And we filled those tanks up to about 80% of capacity by the end of winter. And this was our first full winter that we could do this, because we've just installed the tanks 2 years ago. And then we begin to use the water very carefully, of course. So most of it goes to gardening. I should say this, that I'm not a gardener, really. I don't mind shoveling and putting up fences and things, but I'm not the guy who can tell if a plant needs a drink or not.
Mm-hmm.
But Lucy can, and my kids can.
Mm-hmm.
But I do the building part. I do the infrastructure. I do the tanks and the piping and the valves and all that stuff. And I did it for them because they love it. That's just one of their things. So I'd have been happy never to have a garden. I've got enough water. It just falls on my little roof over there for a shower.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about a garden, that's like 20 times more water than what we need to shower here. So
how'd the snowpack thing work? I'd imagine that's where the illegality comes in.
Why do you say that? Why?
Well, because the ditches and stuff are pretty reliant, and the reservoirs are reliant on snowpack, right?
Well, yes, that's very true. Although a person's roof to their house compared to the ground around their house is so tiny that I can't imagine why there would be a law to say, you can't have that snow. That snow's got to go on the ground.
Oh, you're talking about snow just from your property?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. And plus, none of the water that lands on this property ever makes it into a irrigation ditch or even the river. It just soaks in. We're too far from all that. So this, if I don't catch it, it's just gone. It just hits the ground and it evaporates back up into the atmosphere again.
Right. So do you all grow all your own food?
No.
No.
We do not grow all our own food. That's a nice idea, but there are so many gardeners who have good water and better soil that we know in town. In fact, the folks that invited us up here, they're gardeners in that regard. And so it's better to just go work for them for a while and just, trade for food, get food from them. And we eat out of the grocery store mostly, I think, like most people would.
Yeah.
And again, that's kind of not my area of interest. So, we'll grow some tomatoes and some cucumbers, but even that's hard because of the pack rats and the squirrels and the mice, constantly wanting to eat our little plants and mess us up. And plus, we are in the desert, and you do have to really keep the water going. We mulch like crazy, but it's the water that's the big issue. And it takes a lot of water to run a garden.
So even though it hasn't rained much, you're good on monarch.
Yes, and the reason is because this is interesting. Because I think about this. People have been talking up until we had that rainstorm last week. Like, when, is it ever going to rain again? You know, because it has been so long since it's rained. And I'm, you know, checking the amount of water that I have, and we were down to about 50%. That was the lowest we saw it. And then it rains. We just get a little afternoon rain shower, you know, maybe rain for 20 minutes or 30 minutes, something like that. Well, that's not a lot of help to the folks that are complaining about water for, because of their gardens or their hay or whatever. Because what they need is they need massive quantities of water in the reservoir that feeds the irrigation ditches so they can use that water. But that rain, it wets the ground. That's nice. They don't have to water their lawn that day. But basically, 3 days later, they're back to where they were.
Yeah.
That little half-hour rain puts 25%, fills my tanks back up to 75%, from 50 to 75%. You know, we do collect the rain all winter trying to get ready for spring, but then these little rains, these little tiny rainstorms, which is what deserts are like, you know, they never rain very long, they're glorious because we're trying to put every bit of that hits the roof into a tank, and it really recharges our whole system. Now we're ready to go.
Right.
You know, we got a lot more water than we did out of one little afternoon rain shower.
Yeah.
So actually, the system works really well. And our irrigation system is not the same tanks as is our house water. We don't drink out of the tanks that we irrigate with,
okay,
that we use on the garden. That's strictly for the garden. Yes, we've got a little orchard down here, and I'll show you that. I'll show that in a little bit if you'd like.
Yeah.
But again, that's kind of other people's interest, not really mine. But since this is a place that wants to support people's passions, it's my passion to dig a ditch and put a pipe in it, so I'll be happy to do that for you, so you can go ahead and garden, because that's what you like to do.
Yeah.
So it kind of works out.
So how do you come across this property? Or how do you come to acquire this property?
A friend of mine who lives close by here, he knew that this was coming up for sale. The people who bought it, who owned it, had put it up for sale a year prior, and they got no luck at all trying to sell it. So they took it off the market, and then they were going to put it back on the market, and he told me about that. So before they actually put it on the market, I came up and said, I think you heard you're going to sell your place. And they said, yeah. So I said, how much? And they told me how much, and I said, okay, I've saved that much. I'll buy it. So it took about a week for me to actually come from looking at it and walking around and then telling them yes, and then probably less than 2 weeks later, I had the deed. I had to.
You never had to make payments?
No.
I don't know how much money it was, but how were you able to save enough money to buy property when you weren't really making money?
Well, I guess the answer to that is by being extremely frugal.
Mm.
It's hard to get a nickel out of my pocket.
Yeah.
And I'd rather see it go to savings, because a pile of money has power in it. If I wanted to buy that Traco, for instance, and I don't want to borrow money, I got to have $10,000.
Yeah.
I got to be able to hand that over to the person who wants to sell that.
Mm-hmm.
And if I've got $2,000, might as well have none. So saving money, you know, I see the value of money, even though I don't really chase it very hard. I guess the other thing is that there's not a, in my mind, I don't feel like I lack a lot of stuff. You know, I think that, and this really speaks to consumerism, and I really do think that some people spend money almost like recreationally, almost like, you know, oh, something's coming in the mail. I bought something. I can't wait till it gets here. And then you got to get the next exciting thing to come to them. And that would be a problem for somebody trying to save money or if they don't have a lot.
Yeah.
And so that either puts them at zero or worse in debt.
Yeah.
So they've signed the line and borrowed money. Now they got to make payments. And that is insanity. It's just so... That's so unsmart a way to, I think, to get by, you know, is to buy ahead of time. I just say to myself, if I want that Traco, I'm going to have to get that $10,000 together, and I'm going to start saving now, So when it shows up, I'll have it. And I am fine without having it until I've got the money.
Right.
That's the big part.
That is a big part. Yeah. Something that people, I mean, I've been guilty of it, for mm-hmm. sure. I'm yeah. just not thinking that way. Yeah. I don't want this thing. I'm just not to wait till I have the money.
Exactly.
To get it. It's common sense, right?
Exactly, yeah, yeah. So I don't know, it's just I don't know what got me there. Other than, like I said before, it just felt like, oh gosh, I can't make the payment. I better go get a job. I better make more money. I didn't want money to be the thing that ruled my life decisions.
And you don't know where that came from?
No, I'll tell you a story. Well, after we left Alaska, we went to Olympia, Washington. Have you ever been to Washington State?
I've been to Washington State, yes. Haven't been to Olympia. Driven through it.
Yeah, well... that's a nice little town. It's the capital. We had saved $22,000 while we were in Alaska. That was a big year from, you know, when I'm averaging $7,500, $2,200, $22,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah. That's from because you were a pilot?
Yeah. Yeah, and they paid well, and, you know, I was there a year, and so I got a paycheck every month. And they provided us with a place to live.
Yeah.
So we saved a lot of money.
Yeah.
$22,000, not a lot of money, but... I forget what year it was. What? In early 80s, I guess it was. And so we found a real estate agent in Olympia. Well, the first thing we did was we got an apartment. And I was like, oh, man, we're just throwing money down a rat hole every month.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do this anymore. Let's get a place. So we found a real estate agent who was a friend of a friend. And we said, find us a place that costs $20,000. You mean you'd get laughed right in the face now if you said that. But and then... It was possible. It wasn't very common, but it was possible. So he found two places. One that was a cabin that was composting in the woods, and the other was an old farmhouse that was in a nice neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so we said, yes, we'll buy that. We'll buy that house. And, you know, it was right in town. So when we went to the title company, we went there with cash in a brown paper bag, $20,000, and slid it across the table. So there's the payment. For the house, and they gave me the title and the deed, and then I said to myself, okay, I've got $2,000 to live off of now, and the longer I can make that $2,000 last, the longer I can postpone getting a job. But I thought I had to get a job because I was married, I had a baby, and I had to support this house. We had to eat. How are we going to do that? Got to have a job. And for some reason, in my mind, I thought $35,000 a year is minimum of what I would need to make to get by, just so we'd all stay alive.
Yeah.
So what I did was I got ruthlessly good at plugging up all the little leaks where the money would leak out. For instance, you had to pay a gas bill to run your run the heater in the house. Well, I just pulled the heater out of the house and put in a wood stove where I could get wood for free. I knew where I could get wood, so that was just labor instead of money. We rototilled the whole yard and put in a garden so we could grow as much food as we could and not have to spend it at the grocery store. Mm. And just all these little places, I could name 10 little things that I did right away to try to stop that $2,000 from being eroded away.
Yeah.
Because when it was gone, that's all she wrote. I'd have to just go get a job. And so I got so good at it that it just slowed to a trickle.
Mm.
And we could take the money and go to the grocery store and buy what we needed, and we could pay our electric bill, and we could get by. We could put gas in the truck and all that. But we limited how much we drove, and you know, we were careful at the grocery store, didn't buy fancy food. And then I started working on this house, fixing it up, because it needed a lot of work. It needed a new foundation and all that. So I did all that and added a new room and porch and all that. It was just super fun. And I was just learning all this. I didn't know how to do it.
Yeah.
Just figuring it out. And people in the neighborhood would come by and say, oh, my God, you're doing so much to this house. It's so great.
They're probably like, who's a crazy person to buy this house that needed a new foundation?
Really? Yeah, I know. Well, at $20,000, it was a pretty darn good choice, because I put a brand new foundation under it all myself and did it for really cheap. So then the people in the neighborhood, we took a picture of our house, made a little flyer, and went just next door and just around one block or two blocks, that's it, and put these little flyers in people's mailboxes that I would be their handyman for $10 an hour. And I could do lawn work or electrical work or plumbing or work on your sewer, do auto mechanics, you know, put a roof on your house, you know, paint, anything that needed done, you could hire me and I would do it. I printed up a couple hundred of those flyers. I passed out 50 of them. That was it. I had so much work.
Yeah.
And got straight up $10 an hour. And that was a lot in those days. That was actually asking a lot.
Yeah.
But people willingly paid me that. And they loved having me do all these little handyman jobs for them. So I did that and bounced back and forth between my house and then,
well, you're learning how to do things and doing the kind of work you like.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just a blast. And so I want more of this, because the thing about that money coming in, that was freedom money. That didn't even feel like I was working.
Yeah.
I was actually just helping my neighbors in a way. But I was putting money back into my savings rather than draining it now. So we started actually building upon that $2,000. So, you see, it's frugality. It's just really just, it's extreme frugality was a lot of what. There was a book written years ago. I don't know if you've read it or not. Catchy title. It's called Your Money or Your Life.
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
I haven't read it.
It's a neat book. And the folks that wrote it interviewed us at the time. Because they were, you know, it's an interesting formula on how to get by. But it was kind of like the very first time we'd heard somebody talk about money and lifestyle and how to get by that was similar to our philosophy, where normally it's everybody does a normal thing to get a job. They have payments, and that's the way life goes. But the idea behind the book is, you know, don't do that. You know, well, if you do have a job, be sure you're saving money, because it's that power in your the amount of money you save, you can really, then you can buy your house, pay it off, and then a little bit of money it takes to feed yourself, you're good to go.
Yeah.
You can retire, you know, at 35 or 40 years old. And I thought, oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I would like to do that. So anyway, that was kind of our first introduction to, you know, really trying to do that. Today, people are excited about getting out of debt.
Yeah.
That's their thing. And it was like, oh man, I'd love to be out of debt. And so there's even radio programs about how to, you know, what they did to start saving and start cutting their expenses and paying off that debt. And then boom, that magical day comes and they're out of debt.
Get right back into it.
Yeah, it's possible. It's very possible. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I've been having a lot of the, how did we get here conversations. About myself too. I'm like not in massive debt or anything, but enough. So it's like, how did I let this happen?
Uh-huh.
For sure.
Pretty easy. Well, the culture really supports that.
And I grew up in a household. I, you know, looking back, wish I kind of paid more attention to my mom and less attention. I love my dad very much, but he's a consumer-y dude.
Mm-hmm.
He also knows how to fix things. He's good about doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just grew up in a very consumer-y household. Whereas my mom, like, if we need a new curtain, she would just make the curtains.
Yeah.
Cool. But my dad, you know, likes his boat and his wine.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, makes a difference.
It's very similar in my family. My dad was the spender and my mom was the saver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, do you ever, or did you in the past ever have your time where you're just like, I just want a nice meal from a restaurant?
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, and we do that.
Yeah.
We can do that. Mm-hmm. We've done it. When we say a nice meal from a restaurant, you know, it's a relative thing. When we buy a pizza,
yeah,
that's like a celebratory supper for us. You know,
right.
The kids, oh, we're having pizza tonight that we're buying from the store.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know where all the all-you-can-eat restaurants are, and that's a big night out for us.
Yeah.
So when you say a nice meal, I mean a nice meal with a bottle of wine and a $40 steak, we don't do that very often.
No.
At all, in fact. Because to me, honestly, I look at the expense of that. There's two things that work on me One is, it's too much money. I could buy so many groceries with the same amount of money and live for a week instead of one meal. And the other thing is, I'm not that thrilled about having other people wait on me. And that's a funny thing.
Yeah.
But I feel a little apologetic. Like, you know, can I help you? Should I bring these dishes to the kitchen?
Yeah.
You know? And some people actually like that. Mm-hmm. In fact, they demand it. You're not fast enough. Be, you know, bring the food faster. Take this back and warm it up. You know, things like that. I would never do that.
Yeah.
So I don't like the feeling of being, you know, waited on. I like to wait on people.
Mm-hmm.
That is okay. But yeah. I don't know what that is. But yeah. I thought I'd throw that in.
This is a silly question, but do you drink like coffee or wine or anything like that?
My dad, from a family of 9 kids, half boys, half girls. All the boys are alcoholics, including my father and my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that and said, I am afraid to drink because I'm afraid that I might be like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was difficult in our family having an alcoholic dad.
My mom was an alcoholic. She died 9 years ago.
My mom is not a drinker, but my dad was a full-on alcoholic, and it was very difficult.
Yeah.
And so I never drank.
Alcoholic pilot.
Oh, yeah. Well, my dad was actually, he was a pilot for a while, but he was mostly a aircraft technician, a mechanic. But all the pilots were alcohol.
Yeah, I've heard that's a thing.
Yeah, they really smokers and drinkers.
Yeah.
And so, I noticed that too as a pilot, that, you know, so much drink. Oh, my God, in the Army, that's the thing to do, you know, is get drunk every night.
Right.
But
did you not drink in the Army?
Not at all. I was just never drunk my whole life. I was the guy in college who drove the car home after the parties because I would, if I wanted to really act cool, I'd go get an empty beer bottle and fill it full of grape soda and walk around and pretend I was drinking.
That also, like, helps us not have to answer that question.
Right?
Why are you drinking?
Yeah, exactly. It's funny that, you know, but the people that are drinking, they don't like people not to drink. And my dad
told makes them feel.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know what it is about that, but
I do drink, not a whole lot, but do drink and have gone through stages where I didn't, and yeah, it upsets people.
Right, right, yeah.
Makes them uncomfortable.
Yeah, I didn't do alcohol, wine. I mean, I know what wine tastes like. I've probably drank 3 beers in my life, and so I know what it tastes like. But I'm such a lightweight too. If I drink a beer, I just fall asleep.
Yeah. Do your kids drink?
One son drinks beer, but I guess Elizabeth will drink mixed drinks, but Cooper doesn't drink at all. So yeah, no, I skipped that. And
good for you.
My dad told me something. You know, he finally did quit.
Didn't he?
Yeah, he finally quit, and he quit for about 10 years before he died. But he said to me, he said, I have never met a person who is better off because they drink. It doesn't improve your life.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Exactly.
Yep.
So coming from an alcoholic, I thought, okay, that's good advice. I think I'll just skip that. And I do not, I just don't regret it at all. In fact, I sometimes wonder why people do. It's such a thing.
Well, it's to escape. Mm. I love that you just said that. It's to escape. And it's to escape all the fact that they hate their job.
Mm-hmm.
The stress of money.
Mm-hmm.
It's to, you know, sometimes it's bigger than that. Sometimes it's family issues or whatever.
Right.
Bad relationship or something. And of course, I can't speak for everyone. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also just a way of escaping where you act. For me, like, when I am guilty of if I'm, like, super, if I've had a bad day or something, I'm like, I just need a beer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll drink a beer and that'll be it.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that I'm reliant on that to, like,
right.
calm my nerves, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, people use pot for the same thing. It's mm-hmm. all escaping.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
Yeah,
well, it just looked like a high price, especially these poor folks that just are hung over so bad the next day, you know, feel so terrible. I just think, man, are you
going to
do that again?
Yeah. I think that's what's made me stop in the past is it messes up your whole next day.
Mm-hmm.
Your whole, sometimes longer. It's just not worth it.
Yeah.
But But yeah, only I was asking for the financial aspect because things like coffee and alcohol tend to.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm not a coffee drinker either.
No, yeah.
I don't drink coffee. And that's odd. And I've never smoked cigarettes.
No, also very. That's the most expensive.
Yeah, one. Right, exactly. Yeah, can really eat away at your pocketbook.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think that's about it. I have a couple questions I ask everyone. One is, what does the word process mean to you?
Process? Mm-hmm. The current definition that I would attach to that is in relationship to figuring out life. You know, what's your passion? What do you want to do with your time? You know, how will you feed yourself? You know, like, who am I? You know, what makes me tick? What makes me happy? What bothers me? And it's a process to figure that out. And that process is necessary. That's time well spent. It would be nice if we recognized that as a necessary process in younger folks and allowed for that to occur rather than just, it seems like young people today just are on this conveyor belt of high school, then college, then grad school, then job, then family, or whatever. If there was some way to process all the possibilities of where a person can go with their life, it would be time well spent to do that. Mm. To process, take some time and process, because if you can get that figured out, then that's a good, in other words, you started off in the right direction. Not like you've wandered off and then you just can't seem to feel good about where you are, because it takes you forever to get back to where you really want to be, if you ever do. Mm. But if you can take some time to think about all those questions, you know, what's important to me? And I think the issue with that is that the kids are kind of just pushed along. You make this decision. We can't make it. I'll make it for you. Just do anything. Undeclare your major. Just go to college anyway, or whatever. I'm really in favor of the gap year program. And I'm actually more in favor of just leaving kids out of school, and because the good things will bubble up. They will process all that information, come to a decision that feels good, it won't be unconscious. They will have really thought about it.
That processing, are you saying that just takes time and space?
Yeah, I think so, and I think in a way that's the philosophy that we have right now, right here. You know, at my age, I'm not 20 years old getting ready to go to college, but I don't know what I'm going to be doing next year. I really don't. I'm open to all kinds of fantastic possibilities, just all kinds of. And so I think processing is not something that, I mean, it's important to do early on because you can get started in the opposite direction in the way you really, your heart wants to go. But it's good to be processing constantly. You know, be always, you know, taking information, saying, you know, how do I deal with this? How do I, you know, there's so many issues in life, you know, relationships and your money, where you live, you know, how you spend your time, what kind of diet are you going to have? Are you going to drink or not? You know, are you going to have kids? All that just is so much stuff to think about. It needs space around it. Time around it. If you're hassled and worried and you're out the door at 7:30 every morning, it's just almost like, no, I just got to get to work. I don't have time to think about processing anything.
Yeah.
I'm trying to devil's advocate myself here, because I'm thinking that people are going to say, well, how the hell is that going to be possible to take that kind of time? Nobody has that kind of time.
Right.
But I think, well, I don't know. If you see the value in it, you would make that time, because again, if you get it figured out, you get figured out what direction feels good, move in that direction, then everything else falls into place. You know, your life feels like it's on track.
I think the type of processing you're talking about, do you think just taking 10 to 15 minutes a day to, like, just sit, do you think that's enough?
I see.
Or does it require, like, taking a month or year or whatever uh-huh. would work?
Well, I'm an advocate for making huge blocks of space in your life. Mm-hmm. You can see that that's what I've tried to do.
Yeah.
You know, the whole homeschooling thing and all that. To me, it's so fun to delve into the needs that are right in my face. You know, we need heat, let's put in a wood stove. You know, we need a garden, let's rototill the front yard. That sort of thing. You're not delegating it to somebody. Let's hire somebody to do it. I just happen to love to involve myself in all the things it takes to get by. But to answer your question, I do think that it wouldn't hurt to meditate, but what I'm talking about is a whole different way of looking at life, I think. Because the meditators that I know, you know, once they're done with their 10 minutes, they're out the door. You know, they're up and boom, they're after it.
Yeah.
What I'm talking about is a pretty radical notion, you know, to just say no, you know, to just do whatever you can do to make that space so that you can continually process. You can continually process. When you get on that conveyor belt, it's like it's not your choice. Boss says you got to work late tonight. Boss says you got to move with the company. They're moving to Minneapolis. You got to go. So it's not your choices. It's kind of you're more or less in the system, and it's leading the parade.
Yeah.
So I would say that to have a life where I get to decide, that's super important. Without a huge change in attitude, I don't think people are gonna make that happen.
So I turned 30 this year, and I don't get paid for doing any of this stuff. I've been doing what I do to pay my bills for like 10 years,
mm-hmm.
9 years, and kind of woke up this year and was like, I hate what I do, and that's what I went to college for. I don't like it that much, and I've already tweaked to start doing more things that I like. But I don't. What would you say to someone like me? Who's just like kind of feeling a little stuck because I do have debt and stuff like that. Like mm-hmm. I have to freelance right now to pay my bills.
What is it, your work that you don't like?
So I'm a freelance writer and marketer. I love the writing part, but a lot of that was like doing social media for people. I don't really like social media. I don't really like doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've stopped for the most part, but mm-hmm. doing social media marketing, essentially helping people sell crap that no one needs.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what I would do, Shannon. I'll just take it as far as I can. I won't hold back.
Yeah.
If I was in your position, I would work as hard as I could to get out of debt.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be surprised how quickly you could do that if you really bear down on it.
Mm.
You really send some money in that direction. You get the damn banks off your back.
Yeah.
And that will open up so much space for you where you go, oh, I don't actually have to make any money this week. Refrigerator's full. I know I can eat for 2 weeks. Got enough money to pay my rent or whatever, however it is you live. What am I going to do? Gosh, there's no really pressure to, you know, that all that pressure to pay off those debts is not there.
Right.
And so that gives you some time to process.
Mm.
That gives you some time to say, okay, then what is it that I do like to do?
Mm.
And so then you get a shot, you get a chance to, you got some time now to do that.
Yeah.
And develop a career that you love.
Yeah.
And something that you like much better. Or one of the things at your age where you could say, this is something that I don't even know if I like this or not, but there's a job offering here. I'm going to just do it for a few months because it looks like, you know, I'm just going to add that to my mental resume.
Yeah.
And my experience. And then after that, it might lead to something. You might go, okay, check that off. I don't need to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's so many. I've had a lot of different, worked for a lot of different people, done a lot of different things. The under table money was always, you know, helping somebody drive a tractor or work for a moving company or help somebody frame a house for 3 days or, you know, little things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always fun because it was always short.
Yeah.
I wasn't dug in with both heels. I didn't have debt and have to be there. I just did it for fun.
Yeah.
When I got out of the Army, I traveled around on a motorcycle for about 4 years and just stopped in towns all everywhere and just did little jobs for people. And was really a blast. And I think that the freedom there was the fact that it was, you know, I would say, I'm only going to be here for 2 weeks. Great. I could use you for 2 weeks. That sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
And then get a little money in my pocket. And that was fun. And I didn't ever get boring because I didn't want there long enough.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's what I would suggest.
Thanks for that. My last question for you is, what's something that you're excited about today?
So many of them are related to building projects.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have to say that my biggest excitement today is my is a woman that I met recently.
Yeah.
Who is a builder.
Mm-hmm.
And just the sweetest person.
Aww.
And she really sees me.
Yeah.
You know, she's... And, you know, I think that's what really people want in a relationship, is someone who really sees them, mm-hmm. you know, who gets them. And you can get connected and close as a result. And she really does. And it's so fun to be in a relationship with her because she really, really sees me.
How do you meet her?
I met her through a mutual friend.
I was wondering if it's weird to date your ex living on the same property.
Oh.
Or vice versa.
Oh, my ex just loves her too.
Does she?
Mm-hmm.
Aww.
Yeah. Yeah, she's just so the sweetest. Sweet. She's just the nicest person, yeah.
What a sweet answer. That took a turn I wasn't expecting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's lovely. They're really... Relationships, you know, are a big... that's a big deal. That usually opens a can of worms for just about everybody. I have lately come to a place that is just really nice in that regard. I mean, having this lady is special, and she's very, very much somebody that I love. You know, I've been single for so long, we've been divorced for a long time, and always kind of looking and thinking, well, is that a person I could be with? Is that a person I could be with? And mostly I just don't. I just stay out of relationships. But mostly I've also... frequently thought of a girlfriend, you know, a partner for me would be someone that once that commitment is made, once we've said, okay, we're going to be a couple now, that's a lack of freedom. That's not openness. That goes the other way of what I really want.
Right.
And so it's confusing. You know, oh, yeah, I want that, but if I do, then, you know, that's gonna close things down for me. So I'm not sure if I want to do that. So I'm just very, usually just don't even go there. Just stay out of that. But lately I have found I've been really, really straight up and honest with people that I'm attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say to them, women, I've said it to a couple of men, but mostly it's women, and I say, I really like you, and I would really like to be close with you. And... what I say to the women is I'm not talking about hooking up.
Mm.
I'm not talking about being exclusive partners. And I'm not talking about sex. I'm just talking about I really would like to be close to you.
Mm.
And I have had several takers.
Yeah.
Who said, I will do that with you.
Mm.
And it's really been sweet.
Yeah.
And that's sort of been my... discovery of late on how to answer that lifelong question that I've had about, like, really want to be with someone, you know, because that's so nice to, you know, feel that and be in love with somebody, and yet it looks like I'm going back to high school if I do that.
Yeah.
It looks like I said about my marriage, you know, we had to confer on all the issues and deal with money and deal with all the questions that came up. And now I don't have to do that, and I prefer this. So all these relationships that I just talked about having still have that freedom.
What's the difference between these relationships and friendship if you're not talking about, like, a physical?
You know, Shannon, I don't think there's a lot of difference.
Yeah.
But because of the enculturation that I've had about marriage and women and hookups and girlfriends and all that, and I'm from a family with no sisters. I have three brothers. So that's another thing is, you know, women, you know, there's a mystique about women that I might not have had if I'd had some sisters, you know. But yeah, I don't think it's any different. I really think that all I've done is figured out that I can be friends with women.
Yeah.
And it's just a lovely thing to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And even though I had to kind of say, okay, here's the rules, you know, and it's kind of nice to actually be clear, because sometimes if you say to someone, would you like to go to dinner? And then they say, well, sure, but then they're wondering, is this a hookup? Is he trying to sleep with me? What is he doing? I don't. So you just talk about it right in the beginning. Say, you know, I'm not trying to hook up. I'm not trying to sleep with you. Let's just go to dinner. Just have dinner, and that'll be it. And that's what friends do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but I'm just making it. Here I am learning how to be friends with women at my age.
Yeah.
But it's that's my process.
Yeah.
See, totally. I can continue to process, and I found that as a solution, and it really feels nice.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that, too.
Yeah. Wish more people my age would be just up front, because there's always that guessing, like, what is this?
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah, everybody's wondering. Nobody knows.
People just don't communicate.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Although, I guess a person could ask questions.
True.
You say right up front, okay, now if I go to dinner with you, what are you going to expect out of that?
Expectations.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then I feel like it makes it weird.
Well, yeah, I know what you're saying, but what could be weirder than having dinner and wondering, I wonder what's going to happen next?
Yeah, true.
You know?
I love that. It's a great, great end.